been listening to Radio Looks Lucid. I'm your host, Steve Matthews. Thanks for joining me for episode 115. The title of this episode is Our Greatest Ally. Well, I hope everybody's been having a good week this week. And I know it's been a little while since I've been on here, so it's good to be back in the saddle, so to speak, and have a chance to talk with you a little bit about the events here of the day. I've taken a little break here from talking about immigration and all that. Not that I think that that's not a big deal. I think it is. It very much is. In fact, I think it's one of the, maybe the biggest story going on is the attempt by the Roman church state, the Antichrist Roman church state, to essentially subvert our American Republic. And not just the American Republic, but this is something that's going on throughout the Western world. As we've talked about many times, we know that that Rome, that Antichrist hates sovereign or independent nation states. It hates the Westphalian world order that was established at the end of the 30 Years' War. The Protestants defeated the Roman Catholic forces. So we know that that's going on. They're pursuing their policy of irredentism. That's the policy of flooding a nation with people and eventually taking it over. That's a deliberate policy of Rome. I'm not going to talk about that today. What I wanted to discuss in a little bit more detail, something I talked about last time, and I think it bears some additional commentary here, and that is the situation going on with the war in the Middle East, in particular what's going on with Israel and in Gaza and some of that, and not even really so much the war itself, because that's in my opinion is secondary to my purposes here. What I do want to talk about is the actions and reactions here that are going on in the United States to this, and how all that relates to the Constitution, to our God-given constitutionally guaranteed right of free speech. There are a lot of people that very much do not think that any criticism of Israel should be allowed. And if somebody criticizes Israel, they immediately resort, the Israel lobby immediately resorts to calling them names, and some actually fairly terrible names, to be sure. And on top of that, there are penalties to be faced. I mean, people have been doxxed by the Israel lobby, Israeli partisans. People have lost their jobs over that. Students have had their names paraded around all over the internet. College presidents have been fired because of it. These sorts of things. And I think there is a real problem. There's a growing movement in the United States among many governors to try to pass laws that prohibit people or limit the ability of people to criticize Israel, to criticize Jews or Zionists of various stripes. And the fact of the matter is nobody is above criticism. No nation is above criticism. And certainly Israel is not above criticism, or should not be, but there are a lot of people, some of them regrettably are Christians, who are of the opinion that criticism of Israel should be silenced and that you're not allowed to bring up any issues. So I wanted to talk today, I titled today's episode Our Greatest Ally, because that is very commonly what it's called. I mean, you see politicians in the newspapers very often refer to Israel as our greatest ally, and I think I'd like to examine that. And it's what's interesting. I think this would surprise a lot of people is that if you go by the actual definition of ally, Israel is not an ally of the United States at all, let alone our greatest ally. And that may probably come as a surprise to a lot of people to hear that, but hear me out on this. And first of all, let's take a look. And I wanted to, first of all, let's see here. How are we doing here? Okay, so I looked up the definition of ally. Now I just pulled this off of a Merriam-Webster dictionary, the site online, and the first definition of ally gives is a verb, but we're not interested in the verb. What we are interested in is the noun, the definition of the noun ally. You know, Israel's our greatest ally, we're told. But let's see what the definition is here. So the very first definition of an ally is a sovereign or state associated with another by treaty or league. So in order for a country to be an ally of the United States, there has to be a treaty between the United States and that other nation. Well, this raises the question then, is there a treaty between the United States and in Israel? And the answer to that question is no. And again, they may surprise some people here, but I wanted to go with you. Here's an article. These aren't my favorite people in the world. This is actually from a publication called Foreign Policy. It's put out by the Council on Foreign Relations. They're a bunch of globalists, but they do have some reasonably sound work that they put out. And I think this is a very telling article. This was published in 2019. And it has a headline. It says, should the United States and Israel make it official? The United States and Israel call themselves allies, but they don't have a formal defense treaty governing their relationship. There's no treaty between the United States and Israel. So in the strictest sense of the term, Israel is not only the greatest ally of the United States, it's not an ally at all. It's not an ally at all. In the proper sense of the term. And if you read down through this, let's see, there were some interesting comments on this. Let me do a little bit of a search here. Oops, can't type here. Let's try that again. There we go. Let's take a look here. They always... I find these things and then I go back to look at them and then I can't find what I want. There's some kind of Murphy's Law about that, right? So it says here, it is odd indeed that the United States and Israel are not parties to a defense treaty. The relationship has long been dubbed an alliance, and Israel is often characterized in U.S. discourse as an ally. In the way that the sea is always wine dark and Achilles is always fleet-footed in Homeric myth. Yet, strictly speaking, allies are states that have entered a treaty relationship with each other. And there is no such treaty between the United States and Israel. So notice here, the definition they give in this article is the same definition as Merriam-Webster gave. You know, an ally, you know, is, let's go back to the Merriam-Webster definition. An ally is a sovereign state or state associated with another by treaty or league. And then we come over here to the article in Foreign Policy magazine, and it says here, yet strictly speaking, allies are states that have entered a treaty relationship with one another. Okay, so I mean, it's the same definition, slightly different words, but they're giving the same definition. And crucially, and this is what Foreign Policy says here, crucially, and there is no such relationship between the United States and Israel. So I would maintain that not only is Israel not the greatest ally of the United States, it's not an ally at all, certainly in a formal sense. And I would even argue it's not even let's suppose we wanted to broaden the definition of ally and just say countries maybe that are maybe friendly to the United States. I'm not even really sure that Israel is all that friendly to the United States. You know, there have been a long history of problems with between the United States and Israel. Just take a look at a few of these things here. This is an article from Newsweek. Now this goes back to this is a few years old, but it's not that old. 2014. So it's about 10 years old, but still, I mean, I think this is a legitimate headline. It says Israel won't stop spying on the U.S. You know, whatever happened to honor among thieves? When a national security agency was caught eavesdropping on German Chancellor Angela Merkel's cell phone, it was considered a rude way to treat a friend. Well, yes, it was. Now U.S. intelligence officials are saying, albeit very quietly, behind closed doors on Capitol Hill, that our Israeli, quote, friends have gone too far with their spying operations here. Here's another article. Now, this one's from This is also 2014. Israel flagged as top spy threat to U.S. in new Snowden NSA document. And this is quoting from the article. Israel was singled out in 2007 as a top espionage threat against the U.S. government, including its intelligence services, in a newly published National Security Agency NSA document obtained by fugitive leaker Edward Snowden, according to a news report Monday. So they are a top espionage threat against the U.S. government. That is, Israel is. That doesn't really sound like any kind of an ally or friend to me. Now, here's another another example of what I mean by the troubled relationship between Israel and the United States. Here's an article. This is from Counterpunch. Now, Counterpunch is kind of a lefty group, but I think they give a this is a good article here. And it's from 2018. It says, Israel's attack on the USS Liberty a half century later, still no justice. Now, how many of you listening to this have actually heard of the USS Liberty incident? Probably very few Americans know about the USS Liberty. Well, in 1967, Israel fighter jets and torpedo boats attacked a U.S. and American ship, clearly labeled as an American ship, in international waters in the Mediterranean, and caused enormous damage to the ship. I think there was 30-some, I believe the number was 32, 30-some anyway. American sailors were killed by this sustained Israeli attack. It wasn't just like a one-shot thing. There were waves of fighter jets that attacked this plane. There were torpedo boats. Let's read a little bit about the USS Liberty. In early June of 1967, at the onset of the Six-Day War, the Pentagon sent the USS Liberty from Spain into international waters off the coast of Gaza to monitor the progress of Israel's attack on the Arab states. The Liberty was a lightly armed surveillance ship. Only hours after the Liberty arrived, it was spotted by the Israeli military. The IDF, that's the Israeli Defense Force, sent out reconnaissance planes to identify the ship. They made 8 trips over a period of 3 hours. The Liberty was flying a large U.S. flag and was easily recognizable as an American vessel. Soon more planes came. These were Israeli Mirage 3 fighters armed with rockets and machine guns. As off-duty officers sunbathed on a deck, the fighters opened fire on the defenseless ship with rockets and machine guns. A few minutes later, a second wave of planes streaked overhead, French-built Mystère jets, which not only pelted the ship with gunfire, but also with napalm bomblets, coating the deck with flaming jelly. By now, the Liberty was on fire and dozens were wounded and killed, excluding several of the ship's top officers. The Liberty's radio team tried to issue a distress call, but discovered the frequencies had been jammed by the Israeli planes, with what one communications specialist called a buzzsaw sound. Finally, an open channel was found, and the Liberty got out a message it was under attack to the USS America, the Sixth Fleet's large aircraft carrier. Two F-4s left the carrier to come to Liberty's aid. Apparently, the jets are armed only with nuclear weapons. And, I'm not going to repeat what Robert McNamara, the defense secretary, said, but he called the jets back. Of course, why didn't they send other jets if they had inappropriately armed jets? But apparently, they never sent any more jets armed with means of defending the ship. After the Israeli fighter jets had emptied their arsenal of rockets, 3 Israeli attack boats approached Liberty. 2 torpedoes were launched at the crippled ship. 1 tore a 40-foot wide hole in the hull, flooding the lower compartments and killing more than a dozen American sailors. As the Liberty listed in the choppy flames, its deck aflame, crew members dropped life rafts in the water and prepared to scuttle the ship. Given the number of wounded, this was going to be a dangerous operation. But it soon proved impossible as Israeli attack boats strafed the rafts with machine gun fire. Nobody was going to get out alive that way. After more than 2 hours of unremitting assault, the Israelis finally halted their attack. One of the torpedo boats approached the Liberty, and an officer asked in English over Bullhorn, do you want any help? This was an Israeli ship after they'd been shooting up the American ship for a while. And I'm not going to repeat what the American captain had to say about that. We want to keep this as a family-friendly Christian show, but he was, let's just say the American captain was not very happy. He had some rude things to say to the Israelis. I can't say that I terribly blame him for his strong feelings. Interesting here, it says a Soviet destroyer responded before the U.S. Navy. So, this is back during the Cold War. A Soviet destroyer actually managed to go there and ask if they needed any help. And the officer refused, an officer from the U.S. ship. And finally, 16 hours after the attacks, two U.S. destroyers reached the Liberty. By that time, 34 U.S. sailors were dead and 174 injured, many seriously. As the wounded were being evacuated, an officer from the Office of Naval Intelligence instructed the men not to talk about their ordeal with the press. And that's the beginning of the cover-up, and there's been a cover-up about this ever since. A lot of secrecy, a lot of nonsense, and the whole episode has been largely suppressed by the American press. Something else, and I should have gotten this out, and I didn't, is the story about the dancing Israelis. In fact, let me see. Maybe I can find something quickly here. Remember 9/11? Let's see. Yeah, here we go. Here's an article. Maybe we can get this on here quickly. Okay, this is in the UNS Review. It says, the dancing Israeli FBI doc shed light on apparent Mossad foreknowledge of 9/11 attacks. This is an article from 2019. So apparently, it appears that the Mossad knew that 9/11 was going to take place. And there was a story, and I remember reading or seeing this. In fact, I think it was Fox News' Carl Cameron reported on this. I don't know if it was the same day, 9/11, or if it was maybe within a day or two after that, but it was sometime very close to when that attack on the World Trade Centers took place. And there were these stories about these guys. They were over on the New Jersey side, so they were looking at Lower Manhattan. They had a perfect view of it, and when the planes hit, they were literally dancing and high-fiving it, and having a great time. And some of the residents there saw this, and they reported these people. They took off in a van, and eventually they were pulled over by the New Jersey State Police. Well, it turned out that several of them had Mossad connections. They were Israelis, and some of them had connections with Mossad. The Mossad, as you may know, the Mossad is the Israeli spy agency. They're basically equivalent to the CIA. Let's read just a little bit of this here. This is from the article. For nearly two decades, one of the most overlooked and little-known arrests made in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks was that of the so-called high-fivers, or dancing Israelis. However, new information released by the FBI on May 7th has brought fresh scrutiny to the possibility that the dancing Israelis, at least two of whom were known Mossad operatives, had prior knowledge of the attacks on the World Trade Center. Shortly after 8:46 a.m. on the day of the attacks, just minutes after the first plane struck the World Trade Center, five men, later revealed to be Israeli nationals, had positioned themselves in the parking lot of the Doric apartment complex in Union City, New Jersey, where they were seen taking pictures and filming the attack while also celebrating the destruction of the towers and high-fiving each other. At least one eyewitness interviewed by the FBI had seen the Israelis' van in the parking lot as early as 8 a.m. that day, more than 40 minutes prior to the attack. The story received coverage in the U.S. mainstream media at the time, but has since been largely forgotten. The men, Sivan Kurtzberg, Paul Kurtzberg, Oded Elner, Yaron Shimuel, and Omar Marmari, were subsequently apprehended by law enforcement and claimed to be Israeli tourists on a working holiday in the United States where they were employed by a moving company, Urban Moving Systems. Upon his arrest, Sivan Kurtzberg told the arresting officers, "We are Israeli. We are not your problem. Your problems are our problems. The Palestinians are the problem." End quote. So these were the dancing Israelis. And, the thing that was funny is the people that saw this, they didn't realize that they were Israelis. It came as a big shock when these guys were arrested. Later on 9/11, it turns out they were all five Israelis, and as the article noted here, two of whom had known Mossad connections. So there has been, to say the least, some very bad behavior on the part of Israel toward the United States. And yet our politicians continually call them not just an ally, even though there's no treaty, between the U.S. and Israel, but our greatest ally. And I think there's a big problem here. I want to reference something, and this goes to an article that was written by John Robbins, one of my favorite articles that he's done. And that's saying quite a bit because I love John Robbins' work. This is a work. It's titled "Religious Wars of the 21st Century," and I want to read. Oops, clicked the wrong thing there. Let's try this again. I want to read a few excerpts out of this. Let's see here. So this is John Robbins, and he writes, the result of two centuries of irrationalism is that at the beginning of the 21st century, this article was written in 2006, we are faced not with a hopeful prospect, but with an even more dismal prospect than our great-grandfathers faced 100 years ago. The last 100 years has seen the resurgence of medieval Romanism and the emergence of Romanist zealot organizations such as Opus Dei. Medieval Romanism is not just confined to the Roman Catholic Church state and its thousands of educational institutions, but has gained many adherents among nominal Protestants as well. The prolific authors Norman Geisler and R.C. Sproul, and many lesser-known Protestant theologians and philosophers as well, are disciples of the official philosopher of the Roman Church state, Thomas Aquinas. Their influence has misled most Protestants away from a biblical and reformed view of philosophy and apologetics and into a compromise with Rome. Medieval Islam, now usually called fundamentalist Islam, and medieval Judaism, with the establishment of the modern state of Israel in 1948, are on the rise as well. All three religions, Romanism, Islam, and Judaism, are false, militant, and violent. Devout members of each group hate, oppose, and plot against members of the other two, but today the date is 2006, not 1006, and the true believers of each of these medieval religions have access to nuclear, biological, chemical, and electromagnetic weapons. And he continues here, John Robbins does, barring dramatic divine intervention such as a new reformation or a second coming of Christ, the wars of the 21st century will be religious wars. They will be worse than the secular wars of the 20th century. The three principal protagonists will be the three medieval religions that have warred with each other for centuries. That is, Romanism, Judaism, and Islam. Already the battles have begun. It is important to realize that the Christian has no dog in this fight. Neither Romanism, nor Judaism, nor Islam is Christianity. Yet many who profess to be Christian support either Judaism or Romanism. The so-called Christian right of the United States, influenced by Romanism, dispensationalism, and Reconstructionism, has been a supporter of Israel, Judaism, and Rome for decades. The principal figures of the American conservative movement have been Romanist, though their source of funds has largely been Protestant. The principal figures of the so-called neoconservatives, neocons, are Jews. The U.S. government, in violation of the U.S. Constitution, has taken tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars from American taxpayers and given them to the government of Israel over the past 50 years. We have fought wars and spent billions trying to prop up various Roman Catholic dictatorships. More recently, the U.S. government has started sending money taken by force from the American people to Arab and Muslim nations as well. The conservative movement in the United States has abandoned the American and biblical foreign policy of strategic independence pursued by our government since 1776 for a policy of global interventionism that has angered many foreign nations and peoples, most recently the Muslims. Because Christianity is neither Romanism, nor Judaism, nor Islam, there is no need for the United States, a historically, if not currently, Christian nation, to be involved in the religious wars of the 21st century. But because of the influence of American citizens and non-citizens who are Jews, Catholics, and dispensational evangelicals, we are already involved. In fact, because our foreign policy of intervention developed in the 20th century, and because of a more recent policy of preemptive war, the United States has become the primary target of militant Muslims worldwide, and not of Muslims only, agents of both Israel and Rome are active in the United States, both gathering intelligence and influencing foreign policy. The U.S. government is manipulated by foreign interests. Both Israel and the Vatican see the United States as their proxy in this religious war. And I think that's especially for our purposes here. And I want to just reread his last two sentences. Notice what John Robbins says here. Agents of both Israel and Rome are active in the United States, both gathering intelligence and influencing policy. The U.S. government is manipulated by foreign interests. Both Israel and the Vatican see the United States as a proxy in their religious war. And that's exactly what we're seeing going on right now with this dust-up going on between Israel and Gaza, Israel and Hamas, however you want to put it, and surrounding nations. It's not just Israel and Hamas. I mean, Israel has been attacking into Syria, into Lebanon, into Iran. It has gotten a lot of reaction in the United States. I mean, you've seen some of these student protests, for example, at these various universities, and a lot of people have gotten there's been a lot of commentary on that, and in some cases, there've actually these protests have been broken up. Somewhat violently. There was some of that going on at the University of Texas earlier this week, and Governor Greg Abbott sent in the Texas National Guard, and they end up breaking up the protest. And apparently, it was you know, I saw some video of it, and they were being kind of hard on these students. They were pretty rough on them. And the thing that's interesting is, I mean, you hear a lot of screaming and screeching from the Israeli partisans in the United States about all the threats and anti-Semitism and these sorts of things that have supposedly gone on, and violence. And yet I don't see any videos of that sort of thing. You know, it's actually pretty interesting. In fact, there was, let's see if I can find this. There was there was somebody, a commentator, was talking about just the other day, and he was talking about the fact that the dearth, or the absence really entirely, of any sort of violence that was taking place on these protests. Here we go. This is it right here. The Z blog, and what he does. Well, that's kind of got something else going here. Well, I'll just read it here. It says, how many Jewish students have been hospitalized at Columbia during these protests? How many anti-Israeli protesters have been arrested for assaulting Jewish students on campus? Other than hurt feelings, has anyone on either side been harmed? And that's a question that he asks. And from my observation anyway, and I could be wrong. I mean, this is still ongoing. I mean, who knows what's happened here? Just within the last hour, I don't know. But if there were large-scale assaults, if there was some really serious stuff going on, you would see people being arrested for assaulting Jewish students. You would see people, you would see video. Well, if not necessarily arrested, you would certainly see videos of it. I mean, the Israeli partisans in the United States would be making a huge deal about this. These videos would be plastered all over the internet, and yet there aren't any. You know, I hear a lot of talk about it, but I don't see any video evidence of it. And I can guarantee you, if that stuff were going on, you would see video evidence of it, and there isn't any. And that strongly suggests to me that a lot of this stuff is just a hoax. You know, these are just lies that are being put out in the media by partisans of Israel, by the Israel lobby. And that's a real concern because, as I said before, as Americans, you know, we have a thing called a First Amendment. And, you know, the First Amendment is, you know, says that you have a God-given right, God-given, constitutionally guaranteed right to protest. You can protest Donald Trump. You can protest the United States of America. You can protest Christians. You know, you can denounce Christian doctrine. You know, and I mean, of course, as a Christian, you know, I'm kind of used to that sort of thing. You know, our president loves to denounce, in particular, white conservative, white Christians. You know, he wants to tell us that we're all a bunch of very terrible people and call us terrible names. He has a right to do that. I think that it's very foolish. In fact, I think it's quite dangerous when that stuff's coming from the president. You know, historically, presidents have not said those sorts of things about the American people. And I mean, I think that's extremely dangerous what he's doing. But certainly, you know, he has a constitutional right to express that, as dangerous as I think what he's saying is. But the but you as, you know, as private citizens, you have a right to do this. Now you can say, okay, Columbia is a private university and they can have their own speech code. Well, yeah, they can do that. They can do that. But the fact of the matter is, historically, that universities have been places for free speech. I mean, if not, if you can't have free speech at a university, if you can't discuss ideas at a university, where can you discuss them? I mean, universities should be places where you can have these kinds of discussions. And you're not allowed to discuss that. Apparently, you know, there are some people who don't think you should have that right to do that at Columbia University. I think it's interesting, too, you know, some people will try to say, you know, go after these protesters and say, well, you know, they're a bunch of wokesters and these sorts of things. You know, the fact of the matter is these protesters, you know, they probably are. A bunch of wokesters. You know, they're probably people that, you know, from my standpoint, I don't think that I would have a lot of agreement with them ideologically. But I do agree with their right to protest. They have a right to peacefully protest. Now, you do not have a right to assault people. You do not have a right to incite violence. You do not have a right to destroy property. You don't have a right to do those things. Those things aren't covered by the free speech. But you do have a right to peacefully protest against the actions of the Israeli government. You have a right to criticize Israel. You have a right to criticize Zionist Jews. You have a right to criticize anybody that you want to, for any reason you want to. You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to be wrong. You know, you're allowed to state opinions that are wrong. Under the First Amendment, you are allowed to do this. And of course, people are allowed to criticize you back too. You know, that's one of the wonderful things about the First Amendment. You know, that First Amendment right to free speech is absolutely crucial to a free society. That's why it's the First Amendment. And as Christians, that's something we ought to strongly support. The First Amendment ensures that we are able to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of justification by faith alone. It ensures that we're able to do that. And we grant other people the right to express their ideas. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, there's a lot of problems in the United States of America, but it's a wonderful thing. We still do have that, still technically governed by the Constitution, and we have a long history of upholding those types of things. But one of the big concerns that I have about the Israel lobby in the United States is that they are very aggressively trying to shut down free speech. They're trying to chip away at it. They're not going to be able to do it all at once, but they're kind of just chipping away at it a little bit at a time. It was in an article I wrote on my blog about a month back. So I was talking about Governor Kristi Noem in the state of South Dakota. She signed a law that allowed the state adopted the International Holocaust Remembrance, IHRA, and International Holocaust Remembrance Association or Alliance. I apologize, I'm not getting it exactly right, but there's an organization that's put out a definition of anti-Semitism, and it was adopted by the state of South Dakota. The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, he recently signed an executive order that was prohibiting some sort of anti-Semitism thing. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, they sent the Texas National Guard and into the University of Texas and broke up, from what I've been able to tell, as far as I know, a peaceful protest by the students against the government of Israel. And, you know, he was accusing them of anti-Semitism, blah, you know, and this, that, and the other thing. And it was probably done, you know, using that executive order as a basis, you know, that he ordered the Texas National Guard in. And, you know, one of the things that struck me is he showed a lot more energy and aggressiveness in dealing with the student protesters, the university, than he has in all of his time in dealing with stopping the illegal alien invasion. I mean, my perception of Greg Abbott is that he's kind of, you know, he does the minimum that he needs to do to kind of appease his voting bloc, but you know, he doesn't strike me as someone who's actually serious about addressing the problem on the Texas border. But he was very aggressive about going after students who protested Israel. Something else that was very a little bit shocking to me, you know, that has come out about some of these student protests is that and this was true apparently, and you know, I've seen some reports on this, and I tend to believe that they are accurate reports, and that there are snipers that were on the rooftop at both Ohio State University and Indiana University. And I've got that up there. There's an image right there. I think this was Indiana University. It shows a sniper on the roof. And then here's Ohio State. And apparently it looks like there's apparently a sniper up there. You can see the one in Indiana. I guess this is Indiana. It's very clear that he has a rifle. And you ask yourself, why, you know, I don't know what government agency is sending these people there to these universities and put snipers on the roof. That's a big problem. I think that's very concerning. We all remember back in 2020, I mean, you had Antifa and BLM running around burning cities down coast to coast, beating people up, bashing in windows, setting fires, doing all kinds of damage. I mean, I've seen estimates of like $2 billion in damages, and that was just allowed to go on month after month after month. But oh boy, you protest Israel. Wow. Now we're going to get serious. Now we're going to start cracking skulls. And that is a huge problem. Israel's a foreign nation, you know, and I think there seemed to be, and this is especially a problem with dispensationalist evangelicals, I would say Jewish Zionists as well, they can't seem to distinguish between the United States and Israel. They seem to think somehow that they're the same country. They are not the same country. And what's going on over there in Israel is really none of the business of the United States. And you know, I don't want to have to pay for it. And frankly, I don't want to hear about it. And yet this stuff is being pushed on us and pushed on us and pushed on us. Think about Mike Johnson, the current Republican Speaker of the House. His first act after he was elected is he wanted to pass some resolution for our dear friends Israel. You know, it wasn't dealing with the border. It wasn't dealing with the enormous debt that the government is piling up. It wasn't dealing with any of the economic issues that we have here in the United States. No, it was something for a foreign nation. It was for Israel. Well, that's ridiculous. And I think back to what John Robbins wrote. And I'm going to read that again here. It says, agents of both Israel and Rome are active in the United States, both gathering intelligence. Well, you know, we talked about all the spying that Israel has done. They're gathering intelligence and influencing policy. Well, there's an example of influencing policy. And not only are they influencing on the federal level with Mike Johnson, but we've talked about how they're influencing policy on the state level as well. In Ohio and in about two-thirds of the state, you cannot do business with the state of Ohio. You know, it's maybe like you're a contractor or something like that. You cannot do business with the state of Ohio unless you sign an agreement promising that you will not boycott, disinvest, or sanction Israel. Well, essentially, that's taking a loyalty oath to the state of Israel. Why does an American citizen have to take a loyalty oath to the state of Israel to do business with the state of Ohio? That is outrageous. And all such laws should be repealed. And probably most people in Ohio don't know about that. I've written about this type of thing on my blog. Let's see here. I want to see. This is one of these things that I guess I probably should have accessed this and got this set up before I started my live stream here. But I'm going to take a look here at something and see. Let's see what we got here. There is some very interesting stories. There's a lot of this type of thing in Texas. Texas also has that same kind of law as we have here in Ohio. But there is even a a really outrageous story that was out a few years ago, where there were people in Texas, and I can remember some town in Texas when they got hit with that hurricane back in 2017. It was a Hurricane Harvey, I think it was, and they had to sign a loyalty oath to Israel to get relief. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, here's the story here. In fact, this is from Newsweek. It's dated October 20th, 2017. Hurricane victims must support Israel to get relief, Texas city demands. And read through here. Residents of one Texas city are being asked to sign a loyalty oath to Israel if they want to receive funds for Hurricane Harvey relief. And civil liberties experts say are saying the approach is illegal. The city of Dickinson is applying a pro-Israel state law to storm relief, demanding that any citizen or company seeking relief money from the city's Harvey Relief Fund promise to never boycott Israel. Well, if you're an American citizen and you want to boycott, sanction, or disinvest Israel with your own time and your own money, you have every right to boycott, sanction, and disinvest in Israel. You have every right to do that. And it is, I think, an outrage that states, for instance, like in Texas or in Ohio or in many other states, that they pass these kinds of laws and require this sort of thing from their citizens. I mean, you could sit here and denounce the United States of America all day long. You can still get your relief. You can still go and contract with the state of Ohio. But if you denounce Israel, you question Israel, you boycott, disinvest, or sanction Israel, you're in a world of trouble. I have a big problem with that. That we have this kind of influence from a foreign nation on American policy. Now, this is a serious problem, and it needs to stop. And I think a lot of it is that I think a lot of Americans don't even know this stuff's going on, that these kinds of laws are being passed. And once it gets passed in one state, they use that as a model legislation to spread it to other states. And in fact, Kristi Noem, about her adopting her the state of South Dakota, about adopting the definition of anti-Semitism, she called it model legislation, you know, and so it's going to be rolled out to a state near you too. So then you're going to have potentially more restrictions on your ability to exercise your Second Amendment rights, First Amendment rights. This is a huge problem. And, you know, this is the kind of thing, you know, that as Christians, we should be pushing back on. But too many Christians have been sucked into this dispensationalist view of Israel, and that somehow that American Christians have an obligation to support the nation state of Israel. There is no such obligation. And in fact, I would argue that when Christians support the state of Israel, they're actually sinning by doing so. They're associating themselves with false religion, pushing a false and violent philosophy. You know, John Robbins called it that. You know, he talked about, you know, medieval Judaism, you know, is a violent religion. And it is. I mean, you can see the violence right over there in Gaza right now. The massive, massive civilian death toll that has taken place in Gaza. He says, and just I'll go back and quote John Robbins again, all three religions, Romanism, Islam, and Judaism, are false, militant, and violent. And you can see the violence in Judaism right now. You know, there were people that were, after the Hamas attack back on October 7th, they were saying to glass Gaza. Well, what did they mean by that? Well, they meant to nuke them. You know, to drop the nukes, you know, it turns all the sand to glass, supposedly. Yeah, and that's what they were saying. In fact, that lunatic Nikki Haley was out there saying that kind of garbage. These are violent religions, and yet they have a tremendous amount of influence on U.S. policy. And that is a very dangerous thing for the United States of America. And I think that's probably a good place to leave it. I've been going on longer than what I thought. It's 45 minutes. Wow. I didn't think I was going to have that much material today. Anyway, it's sort of an introduction to this whole issue regarding Israel, regarding the stance of the United States toward Israel, to foreign countries. I hope that was a little bit of history, maybe made things make a little bit more sense to you, and kind of maybe perhaps gave you a few new things to think about. I think that this is a relationship between the U.S. and Israel that is fraught with a lot of serious problems, and I think a lot, especially for Christians, I don't think that we really critically examine the reason why so many of us want to support Israel, when I don't think there's a good reason to do that. And I hope maybe this gives you some material to rethink some of those things, if you're so inclined to believe that we have an obligation to support Israel. We do not. I say not only do we not have an obligation, but I think it's actually sinful for Christians to do so. So I will leave it at that. I want to say thanks very much for listening. I appreciate that. And until we talk next time, may the Spirit of Truth guide you in all truth as you read and study God's Word. We'll be right back.